The NHL playoff race is kicking into high gear with the trade deadline now in the rearview mirror, and some teams are struggling so bad that they were in playoff spots and no longer are. Looking at you, Detroit Red Wings. Can the current playoff teams hold the fort and get in the dance, or will some fall? And if they do, who steps into their place? Episode 404 of the Lace Them Up podcast starts right now.
And now it's time to lace them up. Here's Brett and Steve.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Steve Ellsworth.
I'm Brett Dubuff.
We have got roughly a month left in the regular season. Plenty of storylines yet to be hashed out, Brett, and things are heating up.
Yeah, I mean, it's that time of the year. It's one of my favorites, too, because it's like, it's just all of a sudden, like, just like Buffalo is suddenly in the mix again, and there's even like Calgary has a like an outside shot of making the playoffs, which would be kind of hilarious. What's even funnier is like Vegas made all these big moves, and there's a chance that they might not even make the playoffs. Like, they're fighting for their lives basically now, so it would be kind of funny if that didn't work. But we were thinking of just covering the entire playoff race as it stands now, and then we'll do the rapid fire as it stands afterwards, of course. We'll just start off with the Eastern Conference, and then we'll cover the Western Conference after that. So we're gonna start off here, the Atlantic Division. Boston's in first with 95 points. Florida's in second with 94 points. Toronto has 84 points, 85 points. By the way, this is being recorded on March 17th. The only game that's happening right now is the Vegas New Jersey game going on. We'll keep you in tune with what's going on in that game, but when you hear this, a lot of these standings will change, so that's only why I note that. In the Metropolitan, you got Rangers in first with 94 points, you got Carolina with 88 points, and Philadelphia, surprisingly, with 76 points. And then the two wildcard spots, we have Tampa Bay with 78 points and Detroit with 74 points. And then I have teams that are in the mix, or in the hunt. I don't know if, you do watch football, but it's always funny how sometimes they have like these graphics towards the end of the season with like teams with losing records, and they're somehow in the mix of things, and you're just like, wait, how are they in the mix? So that's kind of how I feel with this. But I do want to mention that Washington does have a shot. They have 73 points in 66 games. The Islanders, although they just lost to the Rangers, they're still in the mix. They also have 73 points. So both of those teams are behind Detroit by 1 point. And then you got the Buffalo Sabres with 69 points, the New Jersey Devils. I feel like, so as I mentioned, the Devils and the Golden Knights are playing right now, but it seems like the Devils have to win this game, because they have 68 points right now, but if they win, they have 70 points, and that puts them 4 points behind Detroit, and it's possible that New Jersey could win if they win out, but a lot of things have to go their way. It's funny, too, because it's like a team like a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, They made a lot of like moves, like they traded away Sean Walker. They got Ryan Johansson, but they didn't. And then they waived him, so he's not even playing for Philadelphia now. But they still, like, they weren't really buyers, but they are, you know. And in fact, they were kind of sellers because they made that move to do all that stuff, and yet they're still in a playoff position if it were to hold today. So I feel like there is, you know, I think it's interesting here with the Eastern Conference where, like, yes, Washington and the Islanders are 1 point behind Detroit for the wild card, but I feel like their best chance of getting in is Philly has to slide, and Washington and the Islanders are basically fighting for that third spot in the Metro. I mean, I guess there is a chance that Detroit could also miss the playoffs too if they aren't as good, but yeah, I mean they are 3-7 in their last 10, Detroit is. So it is possible, but I don't know. I think I could see Washington squeaking in and making some noise. The other team that I want to mention is Buffalo. And they're like, so they're all of a sudden working wonders, or like doing as good as we expected them. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Bowen Byram has been like, I mean, Casey Mittelstadt has been great for Colorado so far as well, but Bowen Byram has 5 points in 5 games for right now, and he's kind of been that, like, he's kind of been what we expected him to be in Colorado, and he's doing that in Buffalo. So there is a, like, an outside chance that Buffalo could make it in, even though they had a bit of a disappointing season. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, I think we mentioned this last week. It seemed like Devin Levi wasn't, like, it has just been sent down to Rochester, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has stepped up his game. And now, but I don't, like, now it seems like maybe is there too little too late? What was crucial, though, was yesterday on Saturday, Buffalo did lose to Detroit, but I don't know. I could see, like, I don't think this is over. I think there is a chance that Buffalo could squeak in and get the wild card. So I guess the only two moves I could see in the Eastern Conference is Philly will be replaced by Washington, and I think Buffalo is going to replace Detroit.
I definitely think there is reason to heavily doubt the Flyers, largely because of the way they've been losing games. If you look at the Philadelphia Flyers, it's easy to see why they were a team on the outside looking in to start the year, and they overperformed to the point where, even by selling at the deadline, they were still in the playoff spot. But when the warning sirens were kind of sounding, was the back half of their Florida trip. So they come off a huge 2-1 victory against the Panthers, and they go into Tampa Bay. They had beaten Tampa Bay, I think, about a week and a bit prior to that. And this was just one day after the trade deadline. And they had a terrible first period. They were down 4-0. And in between, Tortorella was mad at the officials, got himself kicked out before the first period ended, stated, to quote that guy from The Wolf of Wall Street, "I'm not effing leaving." And then he eventually had to leave, but he made a big stink about it. And the Flyers end up losing that game 7-0. The bigger story is after the game, Tortorella gets suspended 2 games. And the Flyers get a fine, which Tortorella pays off. So they have 2 games without Tortorella. The first one is against the Sharks. They win, but they only win 3-2. And that game shouldn't have been that close. They had 41 shots on Magnus Crona. They only gave up 29, and still they were in danger of losing that game, but they found a way to win it. Then they go up against the Maple Leafs at home. It was, I think, not too long before the Leafs eked out a 4-3 overtime win against Philly. And the Flyers, you could say, were maybe out for blood. Instead, they got their teeth kicked in 6-2, in which they were down 3-0 in the first period. They tried to claw back in the second, and then the third, the Leafs scored 3 more goals. So that was the second of 2 games without John Tortorella. You look at the Maple Leafs after Ridley Gate, where Morgan Riley gets suspended 5 games. That, in a nutshell, has turned their season around. They had that collapse against Carolina less than 24 hours before this recording. At the same time, though, that incident with Ridly Greig and Morgan Riley woke the team up, because in his absence, they got on a heater, and this was a good time for the Flyers as a team, as a collective, to make a statement without their coach. And in my opinion, they fell flat in those 2 games. And then they play Boston on Saturday. They take the early lead. Heading into the third period, it's tied at 2. And then within the first 4 minutes, it's 5-2 Bruins. And granted, Philly makes a game of it because they don't quit. But they lost a 1-goal game largely because of that 3 goals in 4:04 stretch to start the third period. Now they get the Maple Leafs on Tuesday. So that'll be fun. Then they get Carolina in Carolina. Then they play the Bruins and then the Panthers and then the Rangers. They have a huge game against the Islanders on April 1st. Can't wait for that one. They also play the Sabres on April 5th. That could be a huge game. And then they get the Rangers and the Devils. And then their final game is against the Capitals, who, as you mentioned, Brett, are one of the teams still remaining. So I think the team I'm the most concerned about is Philadelphia. Your theory about Washington, while I can buy the fact that they've also been overachievers, punching above their weight, you look at their goal differential, it's easy to see that, yeah. And yet they're still finding ways to win games somehow. I think their luck is going to run out at some point. If I had to pick a team in the hunt that probably gets it done, it's either, for me, the Islanders or the Sabres. The Islanders, I'm a bit hesitant because they're a streaky team.
Yeah.
Granted, so is Buffalo. But if you look at Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's numbers since the turn of 2024, he's been one of the best goalies in the league right now.
Yeah, he's been good. Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I feel like that's what Buffalo should have done at the beginning. Is, I mean, granted, we didn't know that UPL was going to be this good. He had a okay season last year, but it was a little odd in hindsight to think of, like, oh, Devon Levi, he's ready right now, and it made sense that, okay, yeah, he should have just been in Rochester the entire time this year. Maybe next year he'll be back, but it makes sense just development wise, and there's that. So I could see why the Sabres were like thinking, like, oh, we actually have someone, because that's what happened to Swayman. Like, the Bruins just put Swayman in, and he was good right away. But obviously that's like an aberration, especially for goaltenders. So I guess that's maybe what they were thinking, but I think the Sabres do. I think the reason why I feel I'm back in on the Washington Capitals is the fact that, they're low-key not bad now. It's like, for years, it was just like Ovechkin and company. But Ovechkin's on his downturn. But there's also, like, Dylan Strom has been making some noise. They've gotten Connor McMichael and Hendrix Lapierre. Rasmus Sandin, who we'll talk about in this, in the rapid fire. They have a defenseman now to help John Carlson. So I think they are able to, like they're a better team than people realize. And I don't know. I guess, like, I can see why people aren't as excited about them. But I think they could make a push to the playoffs, to be, like, a spoiler in the party. I don't think they're going to go far if they make it to the playoffs. but I do think that they are better than the Flyers are at this point.
I think the absence of the old Alex Ovechkin, like we're not seeing the old Alex Ovechkin, we're seeing the OLD, capital OLD, Alex Ovechkin.
But that should
And not having Backstrom there is also tough.
True, but I don't think that's like a bad thing, because like for years we were when we were talking about Connor McMichael, and when we were talking about even like Hendrix LaPierre, we were talking about it because like we couldn't see why we couldn't see Backstrom or Kuznetsov, not in the Caps picture because of their contract and all that stuff. Now that those guys are out of the picture, it's like. And you can see Connor McMichael actually performing. It's like, oh, and then you get like someone like Dylan Strome, who wasn't in the mix before, but it seems like Dylan Strome's actually good now. And you can add in Hendrix LaPierre and Connor McMichael, as I had alluded to. It's like TJ Oshie has been low-key pretty underrated right now. I don't know. I think it's like, yeah, Ovechkin isn't Ovechkin, but... it's still like occasionally like that's good, because it's like he doesn't have to rely on like the Capitals don't have to rely on Ovechkin anymore, because they have other players that can do it. And I get that it's like, you know, it's a different thing, and maybe it's not going to help them in the playoffs. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they get swept by the Panthers or the Rangers come playoff time, but I do think that they aren't like a terrible team, or they're better than what people think they are. So
there's also a chance that multiple teams that we're talking about on the outside looking in get in, because I think you probably mentioned this. Detroit has also struggled.
Right.
They're not getting saves from Alex Lyon. Billy Huso's hurt. Dylan Larkin's been hurt. They've been spiraling. Raymond and Sherratt got into it at practice earlier this week too.
Yep.
And yeah, they did get a huge win against Buffalo, but some of their previous games weren't inspiring to watch at all.
Yep.
So if they keep playing like that, they'll get overtaken as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, I guess I'm just more motivated by the fact that I think they did the beating Buffalo was huge for them last.
They needed that win 100%. Yeah, exactly. You're right.
But yeah, I think there is something to that. Although, to be fair, like Detroit did lose to Buffalo 7-3 a few days ago as well. So it's like,
which is why they needed that game. Yeah,
exactly. So
especially after losing to Arizona, after losing to Buffalo, and losing to Vegas, and then Arizona and Colorado before that. So, and getting shut out by the Panthers.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think there is a, like, I feel like Washington's better than what people expect them to be. I do want to shout out, before we go to the Western Conference, Jake Guentzel is back. He has returned. He has 3 assists in the 3 games that he's back for in Carolina. So far, pretty good. Also, Kuznetsov on the same team. He had an assist in the last game. He had a goal against Florida, so he's played in 5 games for Carolina so far, and 2 points, but still not bad, and 2 points in the last 2 games. And they played, Carolina plays tonight, so that's not going to be updated. I also wanted to shout out a player from a team that's not even in the playoffs, or not even going to be anywhere close, but Alex Nylander, he got traded to Columbus. I forget if we even mentioned it on the show. It was so minor.
But, I don't think we did.
But in any case, it was like Columbus traded Alex Nylander to, or sorry, Pittsburgh traded Alex Nylander to Columbus for Emil Bemstrom. I don't think Bemstrom has been that good, but Alex Nylander, it's funny, I get this goal tracker. I have this goal tracker app that just tells me who scores all these goals and all the assists. So every now and then I'm like, oh, Alex Nylander. Oh, right. Yeah, he's on Columbus now. And then I like looked at his stats last night, because he had 3 points in the last game. And I see like, oh, he has 11 points in 11 games for Columbus right now. 8 goals and 3 assists, so it's like, it's to the point where it's like, he's playing better than his brother, which is funny, because Willie Nylander is obviously very good, so I wanted to mention those guys.
Come to think of it, I was just looking at this trade. There's also a 6th-round pick in 2026 going to Columbus.
Oh, wow.
With the potential of it being upgraded to a 3rd in 2026. And the reason I mention this is because I think we actually did mention it. But if Emil Bäckström scores at least 6 goals with the Penguins from the point of that trade until the end of the season, then the 6th gets upgraded to a 3rd. At the time of this recording, Emil Bäckström has, with the Pittsburgh Penguins, 1 goal in 12 games. So Alex Nylander has already had more goals as a Blue Jacket than Bäckström has had as a Penguin.
Yep.
And it's a difference of 7.
Yeah, that's right. We did mention that. I do remember talking about that. So, yeah, we must have mentioned it. But, yeah, that's kind of funny. And, yeah, not a great trade for Kyle Dubas. But in any case... yeah, I feel like the Kuznetsov and Gensel trade are working out for Carolina. So, yeah, we'll keep you posted on that for sure. So, do you have anything else on the Eastern Conference race before I move on?
It's going to be interesting how the Atlantic Division is going to shake out, just because of – I know we talked about – the Leafs probably won too many times this year, but who do the Leafs rather want in the first round? Do you want your arch nemesis, the Boston Bruins, or do you want the Florida Panthers that just owned you like their daddy in the second round last year? Because I feel like I know I'm probably gonna regret saying this, I'd rather take the Bruins the way Florida handled them last year. If you put those two teams into a best of 7, I don't think the outcome changes for the Maple Leafs. I think they have a decent chance of beating the Boston Bruins, a phrase that has been said around Toronto multiple times, and it hasn't come to fruition. But I think this might be the actual year that Toronto can outlast Boston in a best of 7. So if I'm the Maple Leafs, I'm kind of hoping that Florida wins the division so they don't get Florida off the rip. Because... as of right now, Boston has overtaken Florida, 95 points to 94 for Florida. And then you have Toronto significantly 9 points back of the Panthers. So either way, regardless of how things work out, the Maple Leafs are probably going to not have home ice advantage in whoever they play. So that environment is going to be crucial over the next couple of weeks of how those three teams play and how things play on the standings.
Yep, fair. Okay, now we go to the Western Conference. And you know, it's interesting because I remember last year how like the playoffs were set pretty much at this point in both the East and the Western Conference. So now
it was the wild card race that was the most entertaining.
Yeah, but even the wild card race, it was like pretty clear who was going to be at that point, but yeah, it's, you know, it's still like, oh right, yeah, but like the top three in the Atlantic were pretty much set, and the top three in the Metro were pretty much set that year, so it's kind of cool just to have that thing there. What's even cooler now is in the Central, it's so close for the top three that it changes every day. Like, so I've been, since just a little bit behind baseball here, I had been keeping track of the standings. And so I like wrote the lineup, and I had, and at that, so this was before the Saturday games, Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg were all tied with 89 points. But then Dallas won their game and Colorado won their game. Winnipeg didn't even play on Saturday. So now Colorado's ahead and Dallas is tied with Colorado. But Winnipeg plays tonight on Sunday. So yeah, I guess there is a chance that all three of these teams will play in 91 games or 91 points by the time you're listening to this. But yeah, we'll see. I should also note that Although they are tied in points, Colorado has 68 games. Dallas has 69 games. By the time you're hearing this, Winnipeg will be playing 67 games. So they all have different game points, but Winnipeg notably has 2 games in hand compared to the other three the other two teams. But that's kind of interesting in itself, where it's not even clear who's going to be the top team in the Central Division come playoff time. And then in the Pacific, you have Vancouver has 92 points. Edmonton has 84 points. And LA has 79 points. I should mention that Edmonton has played 65 games. And Vancouver has played 68 games. It's possible that, especially when Demko is injured, which we'll get into in the rapid fire, but it's possible that Edmonton could win the Pacific Division. So we'll see that. We'll see if that happens or not. And then in the wild card, you have Nashville with 82 points and Vegas with 77 points. As I mentioned, Vegas is playing right now, so we'll see what happens there. In the hunt, you have it's basically just three teams here. Minnesota has 74 points. St. Louis has 73 points, so 4 points behind Vegas. I decided to include Calgary in here, even though they have maybe a 1% chance of making the playoffs, and they definitely were sellers in the trade deadline. But they have 71 points. They're 6 points behind Vegas, with 67 games in hand to play, or games played. So it would be kind of hilarious if Calgary ends up making the playoffs, especially when they traded Lindholm, they traded Hanifin, they traded Tanev, and all three of those guys to teams in their division or to Dallas. And it's it would just be hysterical if they somehow made the playoffs and Vegas misses it. But I don't think that's going to happen. However, I could see, I think the biggest change in the Western Conference will probably be who's going to end up on top of the Central Division. That's more interesting to me. I feel like Colorado is going to stay there, but I wouldn't count out the Dallas Stars. Wyatt Johnston has kind of quietly turned into an elite player now, and Logan Stankoven is still there, so there's that. Winnipeg has been good with Connor Hellebuck. Kyle Connor is returned and all that stuff, so I could see them making a move as well. Of course, you can't count out Colorado, but I don't know. I feel like Dallas might eke them out. We'll see, of course. We'll see. They are 6-3-1 in their last 10 games. And then in the Pacific, I don't think there's going to be a huge changeover. It would just be funny, just for ironic sake, that Vegas misses the playoffs. But and the next closest team would be Minnesota to get that wild card. I don't think that's gonna happen. Minnesota would have to. They are 3 points behind right now, and Vegas has 2 games in hand. I guess it's possible, but I don't know if I see that necessarily. I don't see St. Louis doing that either. Calgary, I don't see. I do. We forgot to mention this in the last episode as well, but Nashville, they acquired Jason Zucker, and they also acquired Anthony Beauvillier, which is an interesting move because they were more, before the season, they were thought of as as sellers. But instead, they turned that around and became buyers instead. And as we mentioned, they were on like a big winning streak. That ended, but they still are 8-0-2 in their last 10 games. So they're still pretty hot. But it sounds like they're still, I don't think they're going to catch Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado in any of those three spots. So yeah, they're just stuck as that first wild card spot. So yeah, we'll see, but yeah, I don't think there's going to be a huge changeover. It's pretty much just who's going to be the Central Division leader, and it could be anyone.
Yeah, so I think the best constructed team to win the Central right now is the Jets. However, they easily have the toughest schedule out of the three teams we've talked about. So at the time of this recording, it hasn't happened yet. By the time you hear this, the Jets will have played the lowly yep. Columbus Blue Jackets in Columbus. In theory, that should be 2 points. But if they don't get 2 points there, well, that's too bad, because then they get the Rangers, Devils, Islanders, and Capitals on the road within a span of a week. And the Islanders Capitals is matinee back-to-back. 1 o'clock start in Long Island, and then 12:30 start in Washington. Then they go home to host the Edmonton Oilers. What fun. And then they host the Vegas Golden Knights. What fun. The good news is the Ottawa Senators come to town. In theory, they should get 2 points there. They take on the Kings April Fool's Day. That should be a good game. They have Calgary. I definitely think that's winnable. But then again, the Flames have been beating a lot of good teams lately. They just beat the Avalanche not too long ago, and they look pretty good. Or no, I think they got thumped by the Avs, but they own Vegas. I think it was Vegas who yeah. they played very well against. But either way, then the Jets are in Minnesota, and then Nashville, who are once jockeying for a playoff position on the outside looking in. The Wild could be sneaky good down the stretch. Like I said, Nashville is Nashville. And then you get Dallas, Colorado on the road before hosting Seattle and Vancouver. So there are a lot of heavyweights that the Jets are going to be going up against the rest of the way. And then the easiest schedule out of those three is definitely Dallas, because they do have some, you know, pretty good matchups on paper, but they also have some teams they could probably just kill on the ice. Arizona's their next opponent. Then they get into Pittsburgh, who's struggled to do anything. Then they are in Arizona and then in San Jose before visiting Vancouver. They visit Seattle before returning home to face the Edmonton Oilers. They visit Chicago, bland team. They should take care of them. Huge game against the Avalanche after that. Then they host Buffalo and Winnipeg and Seattle before closing out their season with another home game against the St. Louis Blues. So you've got a lot of winnable games, a lot of games where they should easily get 2 points, and the occasional, this is a huge heavyweight matchup that will kind of test the character of the Stars. And it should be noted that Jake Oettinger, I'm really concerned about his game overall heading into the playoffs, but I'm not worried about the team, because on paper they should still be good enough to win half of the games I just mentioned.
Yeah, that should definitely be a concern. But I mean, I remember that he was injured towards in the middle of the season. I'm wondering if he mm-hmm. hasn't been 100%. So I'm wondering if that maybe has an effect. But yeah, the team is pretty solid up front there. But yeah, I don't know. I guess there is some concerning thing to it. But what matters for Dallas is, as long as he's ready to go in the playoffs, I don't think it's... What I found interesting, though, is that because of the arrival of Logan Stankoven into the mix, and that was solely because of how Tyler Seguin was injured and was week to week. I think we may have mentioned this on the show, but I forget. We never actually talked about it. But yeah, because of how good Stankoven has been, it does make me wonder... I thought maybe I knew that Dallas made a move at Tanev just before the trade deadline, and that was their bigger move. But I was wondering if maybe they decided to trade Craig Smith in order to make room for Logan Stankoven. And then once Tyler Seguin comes back, then you can still keep Stankoven onto the pro roster, because he's at that point where if you send him down to the AHL, I feel like everyone would riot. He's like too good for the AHL, and it's a good problem to have. But of course, because of like what it's their own version of like cap circumvention too, because what they could do is just wait till the playoffs, bring up Sagan, and then you have Logan Stankoven on your roster. So maybe that's what they decide to do. But in any case,
the other thing that I've noticed is, and I only know this because Stankoven's on my fantasy team, they have been sending him up and down,
yep.
But it's just strictly to remain cap compliant.
Right.
Because you don't have to put him on waivers because he's on his entry level. So right. It's easy to just send him up and down the minors without worrying about any repercussions, because no one's going to claim him on waivers because he's not eligible.
Yeah.
So I think that's been their way to work around that for the time being, at least.
Although, yeah, no, I noticed that too, because every, like, almost every day I look at Cap Friendly, and I notice, mm-hmm. like, oh, wait, why are they sending him down? And then I realized, like, oh, right, that's what they're doing. But it is also funny, like, even if he was being sent down and called up again, it's just funny because it's like their AHL affiliate is Texas. Mm-hmm. And they're in Dallas, so it's not even like that big of a deal, because it's like, you know, it's exactly. not like I'm trying to think of Carolina, although I guess now Carolina doesn't technically isn't a part of Chicago, but it's like Syracuse is the affiliate for Tampa, and like there's a big, that's like a 3-hour flight from Tampa to Syracuse, so it's a little different there, in any case, I don't know, I don't see a ton of movement in the Western Conference, but we'll see. I was kind of surprised that Arizona didn't end up making any they just fell back. Because there was a moment where Arizona was pretty good and it felt like they were going to be in the mix, but turns out they weren't. I thought Seattle was going to be good, and we'll talk about them in a second in the rapid fire. But I thought Seattle would be better, but it turns out that they... I guess this might have just been expected, because I didn't think that they would be a playoff team, because they were better than expected last year, but I still thought that they would be in the hunt and in the mix. I guess they could.
The reason why is because they beat the Penguins 5-2 on January 22nd. That's when Letang and Malkin had that gaffe on a delayed penalty.
Oh, yeah.
Their next win was in Ottawa on March 1st. They lost 14 straight games before that.
Yeah.
So that essentially knocked them out of the playoff contention. They were too far gone at that point.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I guess it's just more like you would think, though, that they would be better, or they wouldn't even be in that position in the first place, because they were a good team last year. It's just something went sideways, I guess, for them this year. We can now go into the rapid. But first, I just remembered I have to get the clock out, the stopwatch, before mm-hmm. I do that. So give me a second here as I stall. Okay, here we go. Thatcher Demko, he is injured and out. It looks like it's undisclosed on what he injured, because it's that time of year where we don't know where the player got injured. But he's expected to miss 2 to 3 weeks. So he should be back by the playoffs. But yeah, it turns out that he's not going to play right now. Vancouver, I think they did lose last night. But they are still 5-3-2, so I don't know. I guess it's still not great for them. As I was talking about when we were talking about the Pacific race, it's like it's possible that Edmonton could overtake Vancouver, which would be kind of crazy, because Edmonton was in last place in November. And if Edmonton all of a sudden wins out and they become the Pacific leader, that would be pretty good. But yeah, of course, I am curious to see how Vancouver does without Demko, even if it's just going to be for 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think it might be a blessing in disguise, just because if Demko struggles down the stretch, and worst case scenario in the playoffs, you know, you need to make sure your plan B is ready to go. And I haven't really felt confident 100% in Casey DeSmith. And I think the next couple of weeks are definitely an opportunity for Casey DeSmith to get some playing time and, you know, really build up that confidence where if they do need him in a pinch, they can just tap him on the shoulder and put him in the net. So I think in that sense, it's probably good for DeSmith and good for Demko in a way to kind of just rest up and recharge and get ready for the playoffs. But, you know, if this drags on for too long, you know, the last thing you want is Demko not at 100% and, you know, fresh meat for the opposing skaters. Because if you look at the standings, even if Vancouver wins their division, there's a chance they could get the Vegas Golden Knights. Yeah. If Vegas remains a wild card team. And that's a tough challenge for them.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I guess you're right. Maybe it is a blessing in disguise, because I thought you were going to say that it's basically like they're, you know, you can give Demko some rest before he actually has to perform well in the playoffs. So maybe there is something to that where he'll definitely be 100%. But it might be at the cost that they won't be number one in the Pacific anymore, and they'll have a tougher opponent, first round opponent.
Same time, it tests their adversity. I feel like their adversity hasn't been tested in a while, and it could be good for the team morale in that sense.
I don't know. I mean, like, it's interesting too. I don't know. I think you don't really pay attention to the advanced stats, but a lot of people like that I've been like, you know, listening to from podcasts and different things is that their advanced stats or their PDO levels are like at an all-time high. Like historically high, and a lot of those teams like that have happened in the past, it's like it just shows that like, oh, they've been very lucky from a PDO standpoint. So it's like, I like, even if you do have a healthy Thatcher Demko come playoff time, I don't know if they would have gone far, but it's like a test of that for sure. So it's like, they've already kind of struggled a little bit now, but yeah, I guess we'll see how they test adversity now, because they were struggling a little bit even when Demko was healthy too. So I wouldn't say that it was they've like it's just been like a perfect season for them.
I feel like that could also be like a false sense of security where they think, excellent, we got Elias Pettersson locked up long term, we got Elias Lindholm before the trade deadline, we're good. And you know, sometimes you need that jolt in the arm as a reminder, just like, oh, this can be taken away from us, we got to play better.
Yeah, that's fair. Gustav Forsling assigns an 8-year extension, $5.75 million. By the way, these are the rest of this. These news items are things that we didn't get to last week. So just mentioning that. This is kind of like, you know, Forsling does have 35 points in 67 games, so better than I expected him to do. But and he does hit and block a lot. He has 92 hits and 92 blocks. In 67 games, he is 27, but it's still a lot for Forsling. So I'm not necessarily sure what their thinking is, and this was before the trade deadline, and all that stuff. But still a little bit odd. I feel like they're going to regret that in a few years.
I don't think they'll regret it now. I mean, he had 10 goals and 37 points in 2021-22 with the Panthers, and then he had 41 points, 13 goals last year with over 200 shots. Like, that's a lot for a defenseman. And then this year another triple-digit shot total with 10 goals and 35 points. The one thing that kind of turns me off about this contract that could really burn him is they gave him a full no move for the first 6 years, and then it turns into a 16-team no trade list, so you can only trade him to half the league for the final 2 years of his contract. That's where Florida could really pay the price, especially, you know, as you have to pay your star players, or you want to play, or you want to pay your veteran players, or you want to keep the team competitive. All of a sudden, if you know you don't want to do what everyone's expecting you to do at some point and buy up Bobrovsky, if you have a down year within the next year or so and you want to make changes, well, you can't trade away Gustav Forsling's contract, because essentially he can't really do anything unless he says yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, like, I'm looking at their cap friendly page now. Brandon Montour, although he hasn't been as good as he was last year, he's still picking it up, I guess. He's going to be a free agent this year. You have one more year of Aaron Ekblad at $7.5 million, so he's surely going to get a raise as well. And Sam Reinhart's also a UFA next year, too. So it's a little bit strange from that angle where I'm like, okay, well, Ekblad's going to be making more. If they re-sign Sam Reinhart, then he's going to be making a lot more, too. And you also, not to mention, have Barkov, Tkachuk, and Bobrovsky all on long-term contracts that are worth a lot of money. So,
and soon and there's also Carter Verhaeghe, who's on quite the nice bargain. Yep. In the near future, you're probably going to have to pay him again, especially with him producing at the level he's been producing at. In fact, he's making less than – he's not even making $4.2 million, and then he's a UFA after next season.
Yep. So, but it is a nice contract for the time being.
For the time being, absolutely.
This one's kind of an odd contract here. Jordan Eberle is making he gets re-signed for 2 years, $4.75 million. The only thing, reason why it's kind of shocking is, well, one, he's 34 years old. Secondly, it's kind of shocking because you would think that Seattle's not going to make the playoffs this year, and you would think that they would be sellers, and this would be their biggest trade piece. So instead of trading him away, they sign him to 2 years, $4.75 million. So I'm not necessarily sure what they were thinking there. Of course, I have no idea what he's like in the locker room. Maybe they felt like he was it would be too much to lose him from that sense, and they wanted to have a veteran there. But still, it feels a little bit odd because they could have gotten something out of Jordan Eberle instead of keeping him.
Yeah, the thing about Jordan Eberle is I kind of feel like this, he might be on the downswing offensively of his career, because last year he had 63 points. 37 and 62 is a bit of a dip from that. And I think 45 to 55 points might be his threshold at this point. Then again, it's only a two-year contract, so it's not like you're handcuffing yourselves to term. And I think with the young guys coming up, it's going to be nice to have a guy like Eberle kind of showing them the ropes, which I think is also important.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess maybe it's just a vet experience guy, but I still felt like they could have traded him away. Anyways, Rasmus Sandin, 5 years, $4.6 million extended. I thought he was doing better than he was. When I was looking at his stats, I was like, oh, he has 20 points in 58 games. Not as good as I thought he was, but I do think that he has, I guess it's because he's been on a pointless streak in his last six games. So maybe that has something to do with it. But at the same time, he's 24 years old. He can grow into the role, especially when John Carlson's going to be, he's past his prime kind of thing, if he's not already. So I do like this move where they can kind of set him up to be the defenseman to rely on. But he's not there at that moment. He still has to get to that next step, and that's what they're hoping he does with this contract.
I think they're hoping that, you know, as play is going to be on the upswing and as they retool their roster a little bit and utilize some of the cap space that they've acquired to kind of build up their team a little bit, that those guys can kind of complement his game better than what they currently have. And, you know, for his case, hopefully that does happen. But if they end up trading him, you know, to probably like an underrated heavyweight, maybe that team can get the best out of Rasmus Sandin on that contract. That's also a possibility.
Yep, that's fair. And then we have Tommy Novak. He gets 3 years. They keep him 3 years by $3.5 million. This isn't actually that bad of a contract. I kind of like this move. 38 points in 57 games. He's like low-key pretty good. He had a goal last night, and he's had a couple of points the last couple games. So this is a low-key nice thing. It's not like too big, not too small either. He's a good like middle six guy for them.
I feel like he's kind of like a Victor Arvidsson type of underrated, where. He gets a pretty decent amount of goals and he doesn't really shoot the puck all that much. Like you look at his shooting percentage this year, it's 16.3%. He doesn't even have 100 shots on the season. And as a rookie, he didn't even hit the 100 shot mark. His shooting percentage was 18.3 and he had 17 goals in 51 games on top of 43 points. So, and his ice time's actually gone down. Last year was 14.39. This year it's down to 14.16.
Yep.
And still getting a respectable amount of power play time as well. So I don't think like he's a guy that you can lean on offensively, but definitely one of those secondary scores that Nashville needs. I don't know if you've seen Gustav Nyquist's numbers this year, Brett. I think he's back.
Yeah.
He's looked pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a big reason why Nashville is doing so well. That and Ryan O'Reilly and Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, and, of course, UC Saros. So, like, the Predators are a nice team for sure. And then lastly, we have here Nick Seeler. He gets Philly extends him 4 years, $2.7 million. You look at his stat totals and it's not that super impressive. I mean, I guess he does block and hit a lot. At the same time, it's still like, I don't love when teams like take like bottom pair or bottom six guys, and like have them for like longer term or like 4 years or more, because then it's like, you know, you could find those anywhere basically. So he does have 12 points in 63 games and it does seem like, and he does have 15 as a plus minus, so maybe he's not bad defensively, and that's not, you know, of course points aren't everything, especially for defensemen, but I don't know. I think it's still a little bit strange where you would think like, oh, maybe that wouldn't necessarily be a great fit, but maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll see how that goes. It's he's also 30 years old, so it's he's probably not going to be that, like, this might be his best year.
The other thing I wanted to mention about this guy, and it's largely because I saw this on Twitter. Well, X, whatever, formerly Twitter. Apparently a couple of years ago, he was thinking about retirement.
Oh, really?
And now it gets a 4-year contract at that price. So it's just, you know, a guy just, you know, beating whatever odds are out there. And you love to see stories like that. Also, it should be noted, Nick Seeler's a plus 15. And a guy like Rasmus Ristolainen has been like a minus player for God knows how long on I would argue a worse contract than Nick Seeler is. So at the end of the day, if he hits and blocks shots, but he's doing more of the right things, even if he's insulated properly, I'd rather a guy like that than a known defensive liability.
Yeah, that's a good point. But like, you'd still have Ristolainen just because of his crazy contract.
Yeah, they should probably get rid of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, although I heard that he's getting along with Tortorella, so So yeah,
well, we'll that's good. I mean, you're on the team and you get along with the coach.
Yeah.
Especially if it's Tortorella, you're doing something right.
You know, it's interesting because I know we didn't, I mean, we did talk about the Flyers here, but, and they did lose to, the Bruins last night on Saturday. But like the Bruins went up 6-2, but the Flyers did score like 3 unanswered goals in the third period. So like there was a chance that the Flyers could have made it to the overtime at the very least. So John Tortorella, he's a good coach if you didn't know already.
He's a motivator that, you know, is very stubborn with his ways.
Yeah.
But there's a method to that guy's madness, and everywhere he's gone, even though his coaching approach, some would say, has a shelf life, in the first few years it's pretty damn effective, and shocker, we're seeing it again, probably. Even if they don't make the playoffs, they're a lot better of a team than I think anyone gave him credit for.
Yep. And lastly, I remembered something because just another thing that I was telling Steve, like, I feel like we're missing something and I forgot about it. But and I know 15 minutes has passed, but I did want to mention Matt Rempe was suspended for 4 games for elbowing Jonas Siegenthaler. It looked pretty bad. And it was notable that, like, because he's been kind of like, he was like this hero. He was basically this Jeremy Lin type guy, but it was the hockey equivalent of that, where like, because I listen to a lot of sports podcasts, not just hockey related ones. And like, you knew this was a big deal when guys who like the people that I listen to for football news, they were saying like, oh, have you seen this kid, Matthew Rempe? He's like fighting all the time or something like that. And then what was notable in that game in particular was that he refused to fight a lot of the Devils during that game. He did get a game misconduct, but like it was just interesting from that standpoint. I think Greg Wyshynski had mentioned that he suspects, and like a lot of people in the hockey world have suspected, that Matthew Rempe was told not to fight because he, you know, after a certain amount, like if you fight every game, that's not great for your mental health and your physical health as well. So I get the sense that there's maybe a chance that he was told not to fight, but it is still a little like, so it's like, it's like it's a good and bad thing, where it was good that he brought some attention to hockey, but it's bad because it is reminding us of like the sad tales of all these enforcers in the heyday, like Bugard and Nylon and all those
Bugard
guys.
Rippin, yeah, like those are some of the names that never go.
So it's like
you think about
it was so a good reminder of like, oh right, remember when guys used to fight all the time.
Yeah, this is why it was a big deal, fighting and all that.
So now it's like, oh, okay, it's whatever. But it is funny though, like when you look at his stats, he has 5 minutes of average time on ice. He does have 2 points in the 10 games, but it's funny, he has 44 penalty minutes. He has more penalty minutes than he has time on ice, basically. So that's kind of funny.
The thing I think the other thing I was thinking about when the Devils were going after him is because, yeah, for the Siegenthaler hit, but also remember he absolutely laid out Nate Bastian and left him bloody.
Yeah,
I think they were probably thinking about that and were probably pretty angry to hear, wait, you just truck our guy and then you go after Siegenthaler and now you won't fight.
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Like you got to answer for that.
Especially when he's like, he's made a name for himself for being that fighter and all that stuff.
Yeah, so, you're willing to fight Warren Weaves, but you don't have the guts to drop the gloves with us after you, take a look at 2 of our players.
But granted, that's why I feel like Greg Wyshynski is correct, where I get the sense that...
No, he definitely is,
That the Rangers probably told him not to fight anymore.
Yeah.
But it's like strange. It's like the only reason why he's even on the pro roster was because he could fight. But I think it's just, it's like, okay, I guess.
Remember when Tom Wilson was, you know, just like owning the Rangers and they're pretty vocal about like, we will never let this happen again.
Yep.
I feel like this was kind of the byproduct of Tom Wilson owning the Rangers.
Yeah, that's a good point now. It's like, because like the Rangers made that note saying like, we think that Tom Wilson should be suspended for this. And they were basically crying publicly about Tom Wilson. And now they have Matthew Rempe here being an enforcer and all that stuff. But yeah, it's ironic for sure. It's like,
Wilson stuff happened in 2021 towards the end of that season. So I'm just trying to find out if Rempe was drafted in the 2021 draft or the 2020. Oh, he was drafted in 2020, actually. Okay. So this is actually before that. Gotcha. So conveniently, they had this guy as a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick in 2020. Yeah. And it's like, oh, he's 6'7", 241.
Yep.
Well, meet the future Tom Wilson.
Yeah. It's crazy that he's 6'7" and 241 pounds. It's insane.
Yeah, they don't build him like that too much.
They don't. And it's like that Batman quote or Harvey Dent quote of, you live long enough to see yourself, you're a hero, but you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Is that's a quote?
Yeah. I butchered that. but anyways, our 15 minutes were up, but we did make it less than an hour, so there's that. You can follow us on Lace Up Podcast. Our Facebook is Lace Em Up. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, at Lace Em Up, or wherever else you get your podcasts. That's about it. I'm Brett Duboff.
I'm Steve Alsworth. We'll talk again in episode 405 of the Lace Em Up Podcast.